This episode of Country Squire Radio is brought to you by Missouri Meerschaum. We thank them for supporting this show, and we thank you for supporting them.
You're listening to Country Squire Radio.
Welcome to Country Squire Radio. I'm Bo.
And I'm John David.
JD!
Hey, Bo. Good afternoon, man.
Man, good afternoon to you too, sir. How's the weather over there? Did everything clear up? No tropical storms? Everything's fine?
Yeah, you know, we're doing okay. We had a couple days of kind of heavy torrential rain, but it seemed like, you know, it passed on through pretty good. So, yeah, we're doing good. A couple slow days at the shop, because when people are at home battening down the hatches, the last thing they really think about is sitting on their porch smoking their pipe. But
right.
But we, made it through and doing fine, man. What's going on in Houston?
Well, we're winding down this time. I think I mentioned last week that the kids, of course, are in your neck of the woods with the grandparents, and so
that's right.
Okay. It's been so nice, man. Me and my wife have just really enjoyed the time together without the interruption and all that implies. So it's been really wonderful.
That's great.
Yeah, man. We've also used the opportunity to really kind of do some projects. You know, you move into a house, you get it fixed up, you get it settled, and then there's like those lingering things, you know, that you're gonna get to at some point.
Yeah.
Without the kids running around, we went ahead and started knocking out some of those projects. So, like, for example, in my office/studio as it is at the house, before it was just a big open door frame with no door. And so we actually installed, over the course of several days, because we're not the most handy people, but we installed a barn door, a like sliding barn door.
Oh, yeah. Those are really popular right now. Yeah, that's cool.
I like it. It gives a little character for me from the inside of the thing. Plus, once the kids are back, I'll be able to shut out the cartoons, which is pretty
critical. That's great. We did some rearranging and stuff too. It's funny, my wife and I got married a couple of years ago now, and there were just some things that we haven't done, and we're really trying to kind of get our house, you know, more livable. It's been a dedicated thing of late. Had kind of neglected the organization of my pipe collection and my tobacco cellar and all that kind of stuff. And so we moved some furniture around. I got a bookcase kind of dedicated for most of my pipes, although not all of them will fit on there because they're just way too many. But I was able to kind of organize my cellar and got me a couple good under the bed kind of storage cases to poke stuff, so they're tucked away, and hopefully the child won't discover them at too young of an age and all that kind of stuff. So but yeah, man, I know you finally get down the list on knocking some of those projects out, and it feels good.
Well, no, I gotta ask you, because of course we are at that time of year. Father's Day is right around the corner. As this podcast goes live, it'll be the weekend. We'll be going into the weekend of Father's Day. I mean, in the pipe world, that seems to be like the essential Black Friday in and of itself, right? I mean, I'm wondering, with kind of people are starting to kind of go back out and that sort of thing. But how's business been? Like, are y'all seeing the regular Father's Day traffic what's some thoughts there?
We have started to see it pick up, and you're right about that. Like, typically in the pipe world, we'll see November, December. That's kind of a given, right? But then the other highlights of the year are February, which is International Pipe Smoking Day. Huge bump then, lots of activity, and it's that kind of season where everybody's seeking deals and promotions and all that kind of stuff. And then Father's Day. So those three are kind of the trifecta, and they make the whole pipe year really exciting for the retailer, because it's it's a lot of ramping up for all this, and then the winding down afterwards. So but we're starting to see it come around, and like most holidays, that are meant for getting gifts for other people, a lot of times it winds up being gifting something to yourself. And so some of that.
Your infant daughter can't pick it out for you, so therefore you're really doing her a service, really.
I really am. This is something that I wouldn't want to put that kind of pressure on a 9-month-old,
right.
Yeah, so it's been neat to see folks kind of roll through, and interesting, just with our society going through all the turmoil that we are, particularly the quarantining and You know, all that kind of stuff. The tobacco intake for, you know, a lot of our folks has really gone up quite a bit. I mean, you're thinking like, okay, well, you know, you're stuck at home and you got your family and you got the kids down finally for afternoon nap and, you know, you're not going to work and that kind of thing. So, man, it's back out to the patio with the pipe and, you know, newspaper, good cup of coffee, all that kind of stuff. And we've seen that over and over, just a lot of our regulars, you know, even their intake has kind of gone up a little bit. So, yeah, it's interesting. We feel like we're kind of doling out a little pinch of sanity, you know, every tobacco bowl that goes out of our shop. So anyway, we're thankful to be just a small part of people making it through.
Well, awesome, man. Well, of course, you know, we've got some amazing folks that are out there in the pipe world that are coming to the shop, maybe ordering online or just, you know, having their own kind of little their patio has become their smoking lounge. But I got to tell you, man, we have been super encouraged throughout this time. We've mentioned it. We've got these amazing supporters of the show through the Country Squire Radio International Pipe Club. And I am excited to share with you today a brand new member of the Country Squire Radio International Pipe Club, someone who I believe gets the spirit of what is the shout out, the club member shout out that happens whenever a new club member comes along. Because, ladies and gentlemen, joining us at the pilgrim level is Ishna Babbal Hubadu. Yes, that's their first name, and I didn't even write down their second name, because literally, John David, their name is, quote, jumble of letters. Like, that is their email address.
But they had a second name? I feel like we're missing out. What if their second name is their favorite part of their name?
Well, it's more of the same, but here's the deal, man. Like, this is the reason why I actually didn't include the last name is because, you know, in our club member cards, there's only so many, like, caricatures that can go in, and
this he broke the mold, or she broke the mold, whomever it is.
Yeah,
well, I think, you know, Ishna Babbal Hubadu, you know, that seems very straightforward to me, very pronounceable. You know, so I think it's got a nice ring to it.
Nice
Ishna Babbal Hubadu. You know, this person obviously is into pipe smoking and, you know, supporting our fine establishment. So you know, we need to do their name some justice.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I hear you. I will make a specialty card for Ishna Baba Hubadu. Again,
bless
AKA
you.
Jumble of Letters. That's what their name is. It's just Jumble of Letters.
That's fantastic. Joining at the pilgrim level, Ishna Babbal Hubadu.
That's right.
That's it, man.
Clearly, their actual name and not somebody who's just trying to remain anonymous. One way or the other, we do appreciate your support of the show. And hey, if you want to help support the show, head over to patreon.com/countrysquireradio to learn more there.
These are the kind of people that really make Country Squire Radio, you know, who we are. Ishna Babbal, you're the heart and soul of what we're trying to accomplish every week, and we're eternally grateful for your enthusiasm and comedic relief.
What I love about this, man, is this is clearly, like I said, somebody who's probably trying to remain anonymous, but at the same time has done so in such a way that they are now going to add themselves to the lexicon of growing characters and lore that exist within this podcast. Seated up there with the various pappies that have come on the show. Seated up there with Mark VV, who actually will be in a listener feedback later on in the program. Varge the Pipe Pirate, who we haven't heard from in a while. Like, you know, there's these names that come up.
These
from
characters that are you know, like you said, part of our lexicon. And now I can't wait to get the new round of quickfire questions from Ishna Babbal. It's going to be great.
Okay, there you go. All right, man. I'm super stoked for this this week's episode because today we are doing something very different. I mean, you could argue that we've tried to do a similar show to what we're going to do this week, but I feel like before we can even dive into it, I need to kind of set up kind of the structure of what we're talking about, why we're talking about it, and how we're coming at it from this angle.
Man, but let me just tell you how excited Bo is right now. Like, he's giddy. Like, the prep for this episode has, on his end, been just at warp speed. It's been it's been really exciting to watch. So I'm tickled, man. This will be fun.
It's going to be a good one. All right. So, you know, longtime listeners of this show, and for those that are actually new to the show, let me go ahead and educate you a little bit here. So we've got various series that we do over the course of Country Squire Radio that we kind of sprinkle in here and there. One of those series that we've done since the earliest days of Country Squire Radio is what we call our Heroes of the Bowl series. This is where we generally take a pipe-smoking character from fiction and a pipe-smoking person from history, and we kind of do a little deep dive into who they are. Which is something that we very much enjoy doing. This isn't technically that. That's not part what we're doing today, but there's aspect of that that's going to go into what we're doing today. Another thing, another series that we do from time to time is called Pipe Culture, where we actually take a look at pipe smoking and the kind of culture that surrounds it, as well as the cultural influences that plays into it. And in many respects, this is kind of more similar to what we're doing today, but still not exactly the same. There's one other thing I want to kind of point out, which is on the history of this program, we've had the opportunity to interview some really, really amazing, talented people who just are also happen to be pipe smokers. We've had them on not because they work in the industry or because they're pipe carvers, but because they are artists or, you know, they make swords or they're musicians or whatever they may be. They might be authors. And they also smoke a pipe. So it's more of like, you know, kind of a showcasing of their work of somebody who is a pipe smoker of note, or at least whose, you know, art or work we've enjoyed and want to showcase. This is like that, except flipped on its head, because today, we are taking a look at somebody who's not a pipe smoker, but whose work has done a lot in terms of kind of pipe culture as the whole. Today, we are talking about Wes Anderson and his body of work, and specifically how he really kind of leans into the symbolism that surrounds the pipe. Now, don't worry. It's going to be deeper than Ewoks, okay?
stick we with can us. Only hope. I'm excited.
Well, and you know, just to make a little bit more of a deeper connection too, you know, Wes Anderson is a writer, a director, someone who has created a number of films, who has a very particular style, and it's also heavily influenced by a number of people's work, but most notably for the purpose of this podcast, Charles Schulz, who actually has been a hero of the bowl that we've featured before. Charles Schulz,
of course, the Charlie Brown cartoonist, correct?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. In many respects, the nature of kind of like, you know, the old soul that you see represented in the kids and the Peanuts gang, as well as even just like visual cues. Like, you know, you think about, oh gosh, who was it? Was it Lucy that was writing a letter to Santa Claus? And so the words are typed out above her head. No, that wasn't Lucy. That was Charlie Brown's little sister.
I don't know.
Yeah, I can't actually remember her name. So anyway, that was actually Charlie Brown's little sister. So yeah. So anyway, all these kind of visual inspirations, Charles Schulz, Wes Anderson is kind of noted as one of his inspirations. But like I mentioned, man, Wes Anderson is somebody who is instantly recognizable to those that are familiar with his art form. All of his works are so heavily stylized that it's been kind of a point of parody for multiple parody avenues. For example, Family Guy has done a Wes Anderson episode. SNL has done a hilarious Wes Anderson horror film type of trailer.
Well, and if you've listened to Country Squire Radio long enough, you're very well aware that I'm not really a movie guy. Like, I, you know, there are plenty of movies that everybody thinks are, you know, just the movies that you should have seen by this point in your life that right. I'm not even aware exist, right? But Wes Anderson, you know, his movies, when you walk away from them, and by the way, you know, several of them are kind of seen even as some of the most significant productions since the turn of the century. I mean, we've gotten, we think of The Royal Tenenbaum, and the Grand Budapest Hotel, and you know, just a lot of interesting work. They're all movies that, when you view them, you walk away kind of with a little you know, feeling of mystique and lore, and scratching your head, but always satisfied. It's interesting, and he does have a distinct style that you know, is easy to parody, like you said, because it's so eccentric and just the way the visuals are shot, the color schemes that are used, all that is very it's just very distinctive.
You know, so it's interesting that you mentioned this because, of course, you know, I would almost kind of define the various worlds he creates as like these quirky hipster dream worlds. And like where yeah. like I feel like a John David Cole lives in every single movie somewhere of Wes Anderson's. And so it's kind of interesting because when I was thinking about this, it was actually I was watching the Grand Budapest Hotel the other day. And that's what really kind of thought. I was thinking through this, you know, you see the kind of pipes all over the place. And I'm like thinking back to Wes Anderson films. I'm like, man, I mean, like, does he even have a movie where a pipe smoker doesn't pop up or at least some kind of smoking? Because that's really the thing is he really yeah. utilizes smoking as symbolism with all of his characters. But we'll get into that here in just a minute. But that was my big thought was like, there's got to be a John David Cole in every single one of these movies. Surely John David has seen at least one of the movies. Or has he? Because that reveal that for me, because I actually don't know the answer.
I actually have seen a couple of these. I sure have. Yeah, the two I just mentioned. Yeah, I sure have. So, you know, really interesting. I mean, they leave you, you know, kind of walking away with like, man, that was quirky and different, you know, after you experience them. But yeah, of course there's a John David Cole in those movies because that's why they're so entertaining.
Exactly. Well, the great thing is I know that you are a fan, for example, of Family Guy. So if not the films, you would have at least been familiar with some of the parodies. I have to make mention of one of them, which is actually on YouTube. And it's somebody did an Uncanny X-Men, Wes Anderson's Uncanny X-Men. And it's just, I really wish that it would become a thing because I think it's great. Give Wes Anderson the rights to the X-Men film franchise and then just, you know, take my money. Man, another thing about Wes Anderson is throughout all of his films, not only do you kind of get a sense of this kind of hipster, quirky dream world, but you also get a lot of the usual faces or voices, as the case may be. So, for example, Owen or Luke Wilson, Bill Murray, you've got Jason Schwartzman.
A lot of Bill Murray, yeah. You see him pop up quite a bit.
Man, he keeps Bill Murray paid into his silver years, man, for sure. You got William Dafoe's also in there. Edward Norton, of course. You can't have a Wes Anderson movie without Edward Norton popping up. Tilda Swinton, man. There's a whole cast of you know kind of the usual suspects that he pulls from. And to me, man, it almost kind of feels like if you think about. Like theater troupes or something of that nature, how you kind of have the same group of people coming together to do different performances. And even the way that a lot of times his movies are shot, you almost get kind of that, you know, kind of audience perspective. You have that very Wes Anderson-esque pulling back of the stage to see this almost like, you know, dollhouse sliced in half look at all of the various rooms and corridors and quadrants of, you know, the place that you're looking at. So almost as if you are in a stage. So that there is very much that theater troupe, that theater company approach to filmmaking that you see on a lot of different levels. All right. So as I mentioned, this is all kind of, you know, the reason why we're here is because of the pipe. And Wes Anderson, something that he does is he leans very heavily into symbolism, not just in terms of the pipe, but in terms of all of these different various props or visual cues that you see in all of his movies. And the pipe is certainly no different. Now, you can't talk just about the pipe in Wes Anderson films without really looking at how he views or rather uses smoking as an act or as a visual cue, an act for the character and a visual cue for the audience. So starting, of course, with kind of cigarette smoking, because that you find pretty much throughout a lot of his films. And there's a lot of commonalities, like what you would assume to understand about a cigarette smoker that you see on film in the modern era, you can kind of pick up pretty quickly. Generally speaking, if you see somebody in a Wes Anderson film smoking a cigarette, it means they're probably a pretty miserable human being or they're European. And then sometimes they're miserable... Sometimes they're miserable European. But that's the thing. Sometimes there's a hoity-toityness. You know, you think about the holding your cigarette out to the side, if you would, and kind of turning your nose up, if you would. You know what I'm saying? So you have...
Most of his characters seem like have this sophistication level, regardless of their socioeconomic status in the movie. They always have this kind of
high intelligentsia. Yeah,
they are. They're smart. Yeah, mm-hmm. and they kind of smart and eccentric. You tend to see that, and I think it's displayed in how they hold the cigarette, how they use the pipe.
That's true. And so that's the thing. If you see somebody holding it in such a way, that typically communicates that. But then, like I said, there's that miserable curmudgeon nature of it. Like, for example, you might have somebody who's either, and it doesn't necessarily have to be a villain. Sometimes it's a villain. Sometimes it's more of a supporting character or something of that nature. But think of just that curmudgeoned old, scrunched up faced man with the cigarette that's not even straight, right? It's like all bendy and everything else, and they're kind of chewing on it while they're working and that sort of thing. And so there's leaning into kind of those symbolic nature of what you normally see. Now, that is if they are an adult. As with most thing Wes Anderson, age plays a pretty heavy aspect into kind of the flipping of things. So, for example, for a child that you might see, or, somebody, of course, who's of age, but somebody who is a younger person smoking a cigarette, generally that is communicating a rebellious streak. They are misunderstood. They are an adult trapped in a child's body, and they are just trying to get through until they can get to that next level, which would honestly probably make them into that miserable curmudgeon human being that they're heading towards potentially. Again, unless they're European, which seems to also be the case.
It does seem like a lot of his characters, have the, if they're a kid, they are kind of beyond their years. And if they're an adult, they're kind of maybe more childlike. I don't know. There's something about that you see.
Yeah, that is a common theme throughout. Now, okay, so that's cigarette smoke. So cigars, you don't see cigars as much in Wes Anderson films, but as you can imagine, this also kind of leans into the same thing that is generally communicated in terms of the symbolism of a character smoking a cigar. That sense of abundance, that sense of kind of, fat cat, wealthy. I go back to the word abundance, man. There is something about, whereas kind of the cigarette's kind of this little, quick hit of nicotine or tobacco or what have you. The cigars, that's the big wealth of leaves all wrapped together. The concept of I almost kind of think about, burning money. You have those caricatures or those like political cartoons or something of that nature where it's like the cigar is like a wad of money that's on fire.
There are many of my customers' wives that would empathize with, they understand when you're talking about burning money when buying a cigar, that they would track. They're the ones right now raising the roof. Yeah.
Well, and see, that's one of the tropes that you see about, cigar smokers, especially in cinema. And Wes Anderson, of course, leans into that heavily. But ultimately, man, like I said, what we care about is pipe smoking. So pipe smoking in terms of film. Let me ask you, John David, when you see a character on screen and you see this is somebody who smokes a pipe, without hearing anything, without listening to the music, without knowing anything else about the film other than seeing this person smoking a pipe, what would you assume about them just in that moment?
Well, obviously they're the smartest person in the room and, they have, maybe a skosh more sophistication than some of the other people and, maybe have something interesting to say, or a, life story that's worth exploring. And, that person that, we always talk about, when you smoke a pipe, you're making a statement and, that person is not just idly smoking a pipe, right? If you particularly watching a movie, they're going to use that as some kind of item to draw you in and get you more fixated on that character. So I think that person is probably going to be pretty important.
That's right, man. It's a visual cue that kind of communicates maturity or wisdom, a fatherly nature to that character, perhaps, or even the very embodiment of domestic life or domesticated life. And these different themes play out into a handful of his characters. We're going to do a little bit of a mini dive into three particular characters and three different Wes Anderson films here. But, I mentioned before the concept of, the old soul, somebody who is, these children that are acting like adults while the adults around them are acting like children. I have not actually seen Moonrise Kingdom. And so I feel like I need to at least acknowledge this. Apparently one of the kids or the primary kid in that movie has a little corncob pipe that I don't know that he actually smokes it, but I know that is kind of part of his, costume, if you will. And so, you know, with that being the mindset here, without having seen the movie, just knowing that they've got this kid rolling around with a corncob pipe, to me instantly communicates, okay, this dude is, you know, this is an old soul. This is somebody who's far more mature than the world around him. He's somebody that we need to kind of, you know, keep an eye on, because he's going to be the wisest of his peers, regardless of his stature or age.
What he says probably has some kind of importance to the the narrative of the movie.
That's exactly right. So Sam Shkutsky, if I'm saying that right, is that?
I'm sure you're
character?
Not. Yeah.
Well, I mean, hey, wouldn't be Country Squire Radio if I didn't butcher a name.
Right.
But of course, man, like I said, there are three particular pipe smoking characters in this film that I want to kind of do a quick little dive into here. And the first is from the Grand Budapest Hotel, and that's the character of the young writer. Now, this is somebody, when we are introduced to the Grand Budapest Hotel, much like many of the other Wes Anderson films, we are hearing a story within a story, or in this instance, it's actually the story, let me see if I can get this right, it is the story being read from the perspective of the author who heard the story in his younger age, from another person telling a story. So I think that's four, in terms of inception, we've gone all the way down in terms of stories within stories. But the young writer is essentially the narrator, or the first narrator we're introduced to. He's at the Grand Budapest Hotel. We see him. He's, you know, very comfortable. He's got the turtle vest thing. You know, the thing where the, you know, you're warm. What's it called?
Turtleneck.
Turtleneck. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, exactly. So he's got the turtleneck and he's got the tweed jacket. That's the other thing too, right? Like tweed and pipe and pipe smoking, in terms of like,
just go hand in hand.
They really do. We could almost do an episode on that, but we probably shouldn't. But that's the thing. We are introduced to the young writer. He is already smoking a pipe. He's kind of taking in his surroundings, and you can see something instantly that is happening here. And that is that we are being presented with that wise character. Now, is he wise because he's smoking a pipe? Well, yes, but no. The reason why he is wise in the midst of everything going on is because he's not talking. He's observing, right? He is the eyes through which we are actually seeing the story, or more accurately, he's the ears through which we are hearing the story. And I think that is something why, you know, something that really kind of speaks to using pipe smoking in film. And I think also that we can kind of all recognize with is the act of pipe smoking causes you to have to kind of shut up and listen. And in the case of the young writer, that is his entire role throughout the film. Now, when he's older, that's not the case because he's telling the story. But when he's younger, he's listening to the story. And so I think that's part of that wisdom comes in knowing when to kind of be quiet and to listen and to kind of take in the story as it's being presented. So the young writer, he kind of represents that wisdom. The next one, man, is Mr. Fox from The Fantastic Mr. Fox. Now this is a Wes Anderson film I actually saw relatively recently. I guess it was last year.
And this is a stop motion film, is that right?
Yeah, Wes Anderson, he likes a stop motion. He likes a stop motion, man. This is definitely one that is, you can just see the love and the care that was put into every single frame. It's actually based off of a real children's book. In fact, the reason why we even watched this movie is because on a road trip last year, we were listening to The Fantastic Mr. Fox, children's book. And I'm like, I think this is a Wes Anderson film. And sure enough, it's based off of the children's book of the same name. Now, Mr. Fox, this is a fantastic movie. It's really kind of the study or perhaps a commentary on the way in which the world around you forces you to be something that you're not. But even in that, there's beauty. So we have Mr. Fox, who's a wild animal, right? And he and his wife, they have a child. And so he now needs to, you know, live a simple life. He has to go from stealing hens and stealing food to having more of a stable job as a writer. And in his new domesticated life, we see him kicking back with his friends and enjoying his pipe. He is the father figure of the story. He is that character who is sitting back on the nice sofa chair or what have you, and with his feet up in the newspaper and sipping his coffee and having his pipe. Like there's a instant communication that's going on here, which is that classic domestic Americana. And to some extent, like I said, in the way, in perhaps subtle ways, maybe kind of a, you know, at first, a fear factor, or perhaps even the enemy of the story. Because Mr. Fox, as he, you know, comments a lot, he's a wild animal. You know, this is, he's trying to live a domestic life, despite the fact that, you know, he wants to burgle, he wants to steal hens, he wants to go out and be wild and be free. And at the end, he kind of comes to terms with the reality, I mean, spoilers to some extent, that, you know, even though life has changed and he has had to change along with it, that doesn't necessarily mean it's bad. He kind of makes a note to an apple that they're all looking at, and he talks about how the apple is not exactly ideal, but at least it has stars on it. And to some extent, maybe that's true of domestic life. Sometimes domestic life for the wild animal isn't ideal, but at least you get to enjoy your pipe. So there you go. Mr. Fox, he kind of represents that, you know, father figure, domestic figure. But, you know, I think when it comes down to how the pipe is really used to define the father type, the father-son relationship, and then also kind of that wisdom and maturity and really just like just seeped through who the character is, you can look no further than Ned Plimpton from The Life Aquatic. Now, this is a character portrayed by Owen Wilson in that film, and he is actually the son of Bill Murray's character. He comes into the things kind of early on. I'm not going to spoil the movie or anything of that nature, but suffice to say, in the early moments of the film, he introduces himself as potentially Bill Murray's son. They don't know that this is the case. It's just one of those things. He never really knew who his father was, but he kind of pieced it together over time, and Bill Murray's like, oh yeah, I've heard of you. And he kind of decides to take him in under his wing. Now, in one of their earliest scenes together, when they're kind of, you know, learning who each other is, and Bill Murray's getting used to the idea that he's got this adult, you know, now adult child, and that he's got to be a father, he needs a moment. So he walks away and he rolls up not a tobacco cigarette, if you will, John David.
Not a tobacco cigarette.
Not a tobacco cigarette.
It's a left-handed cigarette.
he's out here smoking the grass. And so then he comes back, and then he takes his you know, son off. He takes Ned off, and they're, you know, chatting. They're sharing some things about life. He offers him a hit on his grass cigarettes. I don't know, you know, what we say here. We're a show of I mean, like, at cannabis at this point is legal, right? I don't, what's the situation?
In a lot of places, yeah.
Okay, all right. So there you go. Yeah, is this the smoke of the cannabis, the smoke of the weed. So, you know, he offers his son a hit of the weed. He takes a hit of it. And then later on, he asks him, you know, hey, do you want to finish this off? And he said, no, I don't much care for grass or something of that nature. And then he pulls out his pipe and he starts smoking his pipe. And what is communicated throughout their relationship, the pipe continues to come up. Ned is a frequent pipe smoker throughout the movie, is that the son is really more the father than the father is really more of the son. We see as Bill Murray is getting made fun of by some of his peers that Ned is actually trying to talk him up. He's trying to care for him. He's like, you know, go get him, boy, you know, that kind of thing. We also see Ned developing a relationship with a woman who's pregnant, who the father is out of the picture. And so he kind of starts to become this potential de facto father to this child that isn't his, in a similar, yet not exactly the same way that he is kind of developing this relationship with his own father, who may or may not actually be his father. there's a weird family dynamic that actually goes throughout the entire film. But one of the biggest, like, you know, things for this particular character is that even though he is the son of the main character, he is actually acting as more of the father. And I mean, man, that scene right there where the two men, one of them's up there smoking weed, the other one's up there smoking his pipe, tobacco pipe. I mean, like, it's there's no more perfect visual communique of this exact narrative of the pipe representing fatherhood, wisdom, and maturity than this character and this sequence in particular. So, but that's Wes Anderson, man. That's what he does. He recognizes the way that pipes and really kind of cigars and cigarettes as well, but pipes in particular have been used as themes, and he leans hard into them. So when I say that he has done much for pipe culture, he really has taken those themes that have, you know, existed throughout and really fanned the flame in a big way. And I think that's a good thing. You know, I think there are some folks that when they talk, or when we talk about pipe culture, they don't like the idea of us kind of putting it in, you know, kind of a compartmentalizing it or anything like that. And that's not necessarily something that we do, but at the same time, or not necessarily something we try to do, I should say.
Intentionally.
Yeah, but at the same time, there are archetypes, themes, and symbols that exist within the pipe and media. And like I said, when it comes to Wes Anderson, there's probably no better example of somebody who really, really encompasses those, uses them. Whether or not he is a pipe smoker himself, who knows? I could not find any evidence of it, but he is certainly a fan of the symbol and has certainly created several characters that have come to enjoy it as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really neat to see that over the course of, you know, watching the couple of movies that I have. And, you know, I think it obviously plays some type of role. It has meant something to him, whether he's been a pipe smoker or not. He's certainly been exposed to it because of that. So it's I think it's a good observation. And there's a wealth of talent that obviously he paired with the pipe in order to communicate a lot of main points in his films. So well done, sir. Well done.
Oh, thank you. I had a lot of fun with it. This was a really it's a really good one. There's a lot of, you know, it's interesting because we've talked before about creators who themselves, we don't know or we haven't seen the evidence of them being pipe smokers, but at the same time really kind of, use the pipe in some form or fashion. And so, man, this was an exciting topic to tackle, and I was glad to do it. Now, I do have to ask you this, because as I mentioned in Moonrise Kingdom, there is actually a corncob pipe, and this is actually the tiniest of corncob pipes. You know what I'm talking about? Like the really kind of, you would imagine kind of like keychain-esque, you would almost see it on the big screen and think, psh, something like that couldn't possibly exist. I mean, could you even imagine a high quality corncob pipe at that size?
And yet it exists, and it is made by our friends at Missouri Meerschaum.
What?
It is, man. The Missouri Meerschaum Mini. It's a beautiful, small little pocket pipe. And when we say small, it is tiny. It's so tiny, my infant daughter has one that she plays with regularly.
Clearly an old soul in the making.
An old soul in the making. That's right. It's a great little size bowl. The width, the diameter of the chamber is just wide enough for the tamper of your pipe nail to go right down in there. And weighing only 12 grams, this is a great little pipe to tote around. Good to share with friends. Nice little tasting pipe. Something that you don't have to worry, be too careful with if you drop it in the sink or whatever. It's easy to replace and very inexpensive and affordable. One thing too, Wes Anderson, a lot of his movies, they had that kind of 1960s, 1970s aura about them, the color palette, the color scheme, and you've got whole homes now that are decorated based after Wes Anderson kind of palettes. It's kind of interesting. And the corncob pipe fits right into that. It's just a really kind of nice retro, nostalgic, very functional piece of not just smoking utensil, but work of art. And the Mini certainly counts as that too. So check it out. You can get it from corncobpipe.com. Get it straight from the source or at your favorite pipe and cigar retailer.
And hey, man, if you've got a Mini, definitely take yourself a selfie when you are smoking it. Tweet it to us. We love to retweet it out to let the good folks at Missouri Meerschaum know we appreciate them for sponsoring this show.
Pipe question of the week.
Pipe question of the week this week coming in from Bill C. Here's he go with the Bill C. He says, John, David, and Bo, I've got what is likely to be either a very odd or very dumb question. Recently, I was traveling through Florida and stopped at a local cigar shop to pick up a few sticks for the trip. While I was there, I noticed they had a few jars of pipe tobacco and something that had me scratching my head. It looked like an extremely long coiled cigar, but the guy there said it was pipe tobacco. To be honest, I didn't ask many questions because I didn't want to show my ignorance, but was this guy having me for a laugh or is this something they do in Florida? Being from the Northwest, I was admittedly out of my element. My guess is that it's some kind of cigar gone wrong situation, but again, I have no idea. Please help. Thanks for what you guys do. And that is from Bill C.
Man, well, you know, first of all, there are no stupid questions, just stupid people. No, Bill, great question. This is a question we get a lot of in our shop, actually, because right there next to our hand-blended tobacco, behind our tobacco bar, we have several jars of things that we, you know, blend there in-house and recipes that predate me even as a human. And yet we have these long coiled cigar-looking things that are in a jar there as well. And in our case, and probably what you saw is twist tobacco. You probably saw twist tobacco. The ones we primarily see today, if it's not homemade, you know, the most popular ones come from Gaywith and Hogarth and Sam Gaywith. Very popular, hard to get sometimes, very powerful tobacco. This is very minimally processed leaf. And so very strong, mostly, you know, burley based. And it comes in this form. You can either cut it up and put it in your pipe, or you can chew on it. And, you know, a lot of folks will do both. In the pipe world, we see, you know, a lot of folks, they'll take either a pocket knife or a cigar cutter and just, you know, kind of slice off a few slivers of this tobacco, tear it up. And a lot of times this tobacco is kind of moist because of how it is packaged, and how, you know, just the nature of tobacco leaves being twisted together that tightly and that minimally processed for so long, it's going to be kind of wet. So, you know, after you slice off a few pieces and kind of tear it into shreds, a lot of folks will let it sit for a little bit and to dry out. But makes a great bowl of tobacco, makes a strong bowl of tobacco, and looks like something you might find in the yard behind your golden retriever. So. but it's tasty stuff if you're a fan of powerful tobacco. So that's probably what you saw there, would be my guess. We recently hired someone else at the shop. His name's Dominique Johnson. He's a really, really good guy, late 20s, just a super sophisticated smoker, pipe and cigar guy. He's worked at a couple other retailers here in town, but the pipe was his first love years ago, and then he kind of got off into the world of cigars, and just a really talented young kind of aspiring tobacconist, and we were able to pick him up at the shop. But it was funny, you know, I showed him the other day how to prepare and pack his pipe with twist tobacco for the first time, and the whole it was funny because he, you know, he did it and he was enjoying the process, but Dominique, he was like, well, why does the room smell so bad? And a lot of these twist tobaccos, they may taste good, but they have, depending on what you're smoking, a lot of them smell like burnt hair. So
rotten room note, man.
Yeah, man, I know. It's really funny. You almost get that sense of like, someone left the steak on the grill a little too long or something like that. But anyway, yeah. Having said that, if you come to the shop, and if you are in our area, man, please be sure to say hey to Dominique. Great guy, and I think we're very fortunate to have him at the Squire.
You know, I think that we actually did an episode on twist tobacco a while back. Like, I want to even say it was called, like, Do the Twist. That sounds like what I would have named it. So, yeah, for more on that, also, be sure to check that episode out as well. Yeah, my favorite part of this question is, and this is this is not a commentary on Bill. This is more of a commentary on Florida, but he thought this was a Florida thing.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's one of those things, like, you, whenever you go out of your comfort zone or out of your area, you get kind of super sensitized to anything that's different, and you start thinking like, well, we don't do that where I'm from. We don't do that where I'm from. And so,
yeah, but I mean, like, Florida, though.
Right. Well, yeah, it's true. Yeah. God's waiting room, you know? I mean, you never know. They might be, you just don't know what they're trying to pull down there.
It's like, maybe it's that left-handed. This is what Florida man smokes. Yeah.
Maybe it's that left-handed tobacco. Yeah. Like we talked about in the movies.
Could be. All right, Bill, great question. Hey, if you've got a pipe question, whether you're concerned if it's odd or dumb, send them on along to show@countrysquireradio.com. Again, that is show@countrysquireradio.com.
Quickfire with the Squire.
Quickfire questions. Ow! All right, man. Quickfire questions coming in from Pastor Joda. Yet another name that is...
These are good, too.
Pastor Joda is always great with the quickfire questions, man. Yeah. He's on top of it. All right. Okay. This I do think these are appropriate, though, because these are all car-based today. And I am to cars what you are to movies. So we'll see how this goes.
Okay.
All right. You ready?
Yep.
All right. Classic Ford Shelby Cobra or Stingray Corvette?
These are both hot vehicles. Now, let me just, kind of
break it down for me.
Chime in. No. I mean, let me chime in and also say I'm no like car enthusiast or whatever. But man, that classic Shelby. I don't know. The Corvettes are obviously iconic, but man, there's something about those Shelbys that are just really, really attractive. I'm gonna have to go that route.
Okay, I'm kind of trying to. I you know what? I'll go with what you said because I don't know any better. I think Stingray or Cobra. I guess I'll go with the Stingray.
Okay. All right. Fair.
All right. IndyCar or NASCAR? And this one I actually do like. The IndyCar is what, and you won't get this, but Iron Man was driving in the second Iron Man movie. So I do actually have some differentiator here.
I'm going to have to, people assume like, okay, here I am, terrible Southern accent from Mississippi. Obviously the guy's going to say NASCAR. I'm not a NASCAR guy. I've got, friends that are, and I don't know if they just grew up, having trouble with left turns or something. I don't know if that was a thing for them. I never got into NASCAR. I don't know. For me, it's just not a thing. I'll go with Indy. I think that's maybe a little more fun. It's like the it's the pipe to someone's cigarette maybe. So I'll go with IndyCar.
Interesting. Okay. Wow. What a comparison. In car racing in general, man, it's same. It's never really appealed to me per se. I will say that I think actually the Phantom Menace first made me realize the connection between NASCAR racing and like old school chariot racing and the Coliseum. You know what I mean? Like there's an odd tie there that I just never really made that connection before. And maybe I respect it a little bit more than I used to from once I kind of saw it through that lens. But I will say this, if it comes to me driving, I feel like I would be much more confident driving a NASCAR, which seems more like a regular car, than an Indy car, which seems more like a rocket ship that's like gliding on the ground. So yeah, I'm gonna go with NASCAR for me.
Okay.
All right, Dodge Viper or Lamborghini Diablo?
If I get a chance to own something called a Lamborghini, I'm going to own it.
Yeah.
I can go down the street and buy a Dodge. And we are talking about a Dodge Viper. Like that's awesome. I see freaking Durangos every day. Like I don't know. We're going to go with Lamborghini. I mean, have you ever Googled Lamborghini? The stuff that you see, looks like it came out of a, one of the great 1980s movies or something. I'm going to have to go that route.
All right. So again, I'm looking at through the lens of superhero movies. The Lamborghini is what, I don't know if it was a Diablo, but I know it was a Lamborghini that Bruce Wayne was driving in the Dark Knight films. So I'm going to go with Lamborghini. I will go with the car of Batman. all right. The Gravedigger monster truck or Abrams tank? I assume that's not J.J. Abrams.
No, that is an Abrams tank, which is obviously used by or was
oh,
used by the.
That's a tank. That's a tank.
That's a tank.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, look, with the condition of the streets in our neck of the woods here, I think the tank is probably pretty appropriate.
The monster truck's got the shocks.
The
too.
Monster truck would be good too. Yeah, but I'll go with the tank.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the monster truck just because you get speed. Although, I don't know. I like the tank is always, that's such a weird, interesting pair between these two. But if I'm riding on the streets of Jackson, that's a good lens to view it from. I'd probably go with the monster truck. It's got the shocks and I actually do like the bounce, but I don't like the tear on the car. So yeah, we'll go with that. And then finally, Pontiac Fiero or DeLorean?
The DeLorean. Yeah, I just look, no offense to Pontiac lovers out there, but for two guys that really are not particularly well equipped to answer a bunch of car questions, and then you throw out the DeLorean as an option, it's the ace of spades.
There you go. I mean, to me, the DeLorean is the pipe of the car world, right? Like, you're making a statement. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
There you go. Excellent questions, Pastor Jonah. He's got a couple more for us, some more themes for the next few episodes here. And so always love combing through those. But hey, if you want to add your thoughts or add some quick fire questions to us, be sure to send those in show@countrysquireradio.com. Again, that is show@countrysquireradio.com.
Your thoughts, your comments, listener feedback.
Listener feedback coming in. Let's see. This one is coming in from Dirk, who I believe is in Germany.
Dirk, yeah, Dirk Heinemann, man, the famous famous international pipe carving star and swell of a guy, man. We love Dirk. Yeah, man, what's he got to say?
Rock star talking about a rock star in this email. Now, recently, actually, I think it was last week, our desk pipe episode went out, and so we put out the call if anybody's actually been able to enjoy some desk pipes to share their experience. So it's appropriate that we got somebody who's well-versed in the pipe world to be able to share with us. But he says, "Hey guys, hope you're doing fine. I enjoyed the episode about desk pipes. I smoked a desk pipe last year at a gathering with some guys from Company Pipes. Both excellent pipe makers. You should check them out if you haven't yet." And he actually sent us a link to their site, co-pipes.de. So that's Co-Pipes. I assumed it was Company Pipes, but it might just be Co-Pipes.
Yeah, www.co-pipes.de.
So check out their work there. He says, "We sat at a campfire when suddenly Mimo, the world famous briar cutter, showed up." Man, you know that Mimo is like he's got that rock star status. I mean, like, granted, he already had kind of some of that rock star status, but now he's got that super status after Father the Flame.
After Father the Flame, he does, man. Yeah. He sure does.
He said he came back, he came from the trading show. With him, he brought a huge piece of briar in which he had drilled several tobacco chambers and calabash bowls. It was meant as some sort of friendship pipe or so. It smoked great, but not very practical to smoke through. He says, "Please excuse the bad quality of the photos," because he did send us a couple of photos of this desk pipe. He says, "It was dark and there might not have been a lot of alcohol involved." He says, "Keep up the great work, guys. Hopefully see you next year in Chicago or maybe in Germany one day. Greetings from the old world. Take care and stay safe." Again, that is from Dirk at Heinemann Pipes. And so just to kind of describe the pictures he sent in, because he's right, it was kind of dark and fuzzy, but you could kind of make out this giant like piece of briar with these holes cut into it and these tubes being connected to it, as you know, I guess as Mimo intended, which is to be kind of like a friendship pipe. So you're all kind of enjoying the same pipe.
Again, yeah, that's right. I mean, as we talked about, the inspiration is not lost on someone when they look at the hookah, right? And how it kind of breeds this community and the combination of folks smoking the same tobacco from the same contraption. And he said, you know, it's, let's see, how did Dirk put it? You know, it smoked great, but not very practical to smoke. And, and I think that's, you know, that's kind of the point, right? That's kind of the, you know, the nuts and bolts of your table pipe is, you know, fun to smoke, smokes great. It's just not something you're going to smoke every day. It's an oddity that, you know, when one of the world's most famous pipe carvers is in the woods at a campfire and the world's most famous briar harvester walks up unannounced, they're going to smoke a pipe like that.
What a story, too. Like, man, that's classic. That's great.
That's
man.
It. Yeah, that's it. Dirk, thanks for writing in, man. It's good to hear from you.
Absolutely. We also got one in from Jay Freedy. What did Jay have to say?
Yeah, Jay Freedy. "Hey guys, hope you're staying cool in this way too early heat wave in the South. Please allow me to geek out a bit. Bo, on last week's episode, after Roger's comments on breaking up Esoterica into smaller amounts, you talked about your cigar smoking friend from church who wanted to try some quality pipe tobacco. I heartily agree with your suggestion of Throgmorton Cellar, also my favorite. However, when you mentioned that he found a tin for $100, you quickly dismissed it such pricing as nostalgic. I actually disagree. I don't think $100 for a 100-gram tin of Throgmorton Cellar is as outrageous as it may initially sound. Put on your cigar hat for a minute, and let's step into that paradigm. From this perspective, it doesn't seem that crazy at all. Let's do the math. The typical bowl of pipe tobacco is usually around 3 grams. That means that you should get around 33 bowls from a 100-gram tin of tobacco. Therefore, a $100 tin equals $3 a bowl. Now tell me where you can buy a top-shelf cigar for $3. Both the cigar and the pipe will typically smoke around 45 minutes to an hour. The value is still significantly better smoking the $100 tin of Throgmorton Cellar than the equivalent in cigars. So Let's see. So your cigar smoking friend should grab that $100 tin and save some money. Life's all about perspective. And that's from Jay Freedy. Jay Freedy, you're preaching the good news, baby.
All right. Hang on. I gotta address this. Come on, man. All right. So obviously Jay Freedy is a longtime listener and a friend of the show. So you're not wrong. Nostalgic is probably the wrong word to use. However, I do defend my position on this. Because I'm not like, if somebody is kind of an established pipe smoker, sure, you can make the argument for that price point, and as you very clearly have. But I was looking at it specifically through the lens of somebody who's kind of stepping into it and kind of getting their bearings a little bit. When you're kind of trying to establish your palate, try to figure out what you like, what you don't like, you know, I don't know that you need to jump in at that price point off the bat. I wasn't trying to say that Throgmorton wasn't quality enough to justify the price. And I do understand the breakdown. You did a lot of math here, and I appreciate that. There's a lot of fair points being made, but I still stand by it. When you do have those kind of high price points, especially for somebody who is a newer pipe smoker, that can be off-putting. And also you're going in completely blind because you don't have access to be able to sample it to know exactly what you like or don't like beforehand. So fortunately I was able to actually share with him some of my Throgmorton sellers. So now he's you know, got that perspective to kind of make the decision if he wants to go down that route in the future. But one way or the other, yeah. So Jay's right. But I wasn't wrong, especially from the lens and from the standpoint of a newer pipe smoker. I think
as a pipe, I love what he's saying here. I mean, I agree with you. I know exactly kind of where you're coming from, Bo. But you know what he's saying here as a pipe enthusiast, as someone that really wants to spread the hobby, and that's what we do, and have really made a commitment to do in our business. He's getting to the crux of this, right? Like you can spend $8 on 2 ounces of tobacco, and that is a bunch of smokes. You know, I mean, that might be 10 or 12, you know, smokes, whereas you can spend $12 on a really crummy, you know, Partagas, and that thing is gonna, you know, it might last you 45 minutes or an hour, and it's gone. It's just gone. And you know, people do it all the time, man. I have smoked $12 cigars that have just ruined my palate for the entire day, you know. And and if you're smoking a pipe, you know, and you've spent $15-$20 bucks on a tin, even if it's that high, you know, the amount per bowl is just so minuscule compared to the cigar world. We've got folks that come in the shop that will spend, you know, $30-$50 on a cigar, and in a blink of an eye, it's gone. And man, with the pipe, it's so much of an experience. So I think that's part of it. I always tell new pipe smokers, when they kind of balk at the price of a pipe, I always tell them that the expense in pipe smoking is up front. The expense in pipe smoking is always up front. You've got to buy your instrument. You have to buy your tool. But once you do that, the tobacco itself is really inexpensive. It's really affordable compared to the cigar world. So you don't have to have a cutter or even a good lighter for a cigar. But a good cigar, you know, may cost you $8, $10, $12, $15, $20. And before you know it, you feel guilty because, that has equaled, you know, taking your wife out three times for dinner or something. So I don't know. It's there's something really economical about pipe smoking, and I love it.
All right. Well, there you go. I mean, I don't disagree. I certainly don't disagree. And I will say this, I will feel more comfortable dropping $100 for the 10.
I can't remember if I shared this, you know, recently a lot of folks got their, federal stimulus checks or whatever, you know, and obviously, you know, there were some folks that really needed that in order to make ends meet, right? And, you know, we, and my wife and I used them for some, we had some projects we wanted to do, some savings stuff, and, some specific needs that we needed met. But But then we were like, well, you know, this doesn't happen very often. And we are, you know, if the intent of this law was for us to stimulate the economy, well, we need to go buy something really stupid.
There you go.
And so we took $150 and we went down to our local wine store, the package store next to the Squire. And I bought a $150 bottle of Plump Jack Cabernet. And, you know, it's like $150 bottle of wine. You know, that's four glasses. I'm not the math guy. Let's see, 150 divided by four. That's, you know, $37.50 a glass. You know, is that kind of the Throgmorton cellar experience of wine? Kinda, I guess. You know, $150 for a bottle of wine that's gone in a couple hours. But really, it's a lot worse than that. But right. You know, it's one of those things. Hey, you know, if you're into wine and that's something you've come to love and appreciate, and you want to say, hey, you know, I've tried a really good one that scores really highly, and this is you know, what can stand out as a really excellent specimen of Cabernet or whatever, you know, then you might splurge that once in a lifetime kind of thing to do. And so, you know, if you are a newer pipe smoker and you've been at it for a while and you really have gotten into it and you particularly like English blends or hybrid, you know, English aromatics, crossover blends, and that's kind of a thing of yours, and you want a, you know, historically relevant, you know, specimen of that is a shining example of maybe the pinnacle even of that of that genre of tobacco, at least for some people. You know, it may be worth spending $100. You know, but again, you know, if you're the new pipe smoker, you know, you just picked up your you know, your first briar, and you know, you got your 1Q, and you're rocking some BCA, and may have you know, picked up some Molto Dolce or something from Sutliff. This is probably not your next 10 if that's kind of where you're at in the experience. But you know, if you're a, you know, real enthusiast that's gotten into it and want to appreciate it for one time in your life, and it might be that one thing that you don't ever get to do again. I don't imagine ever buying another $150 bottle of wine again. I can tell you that. But you know, it might be worth it just to say you did it and to smoke something that you know, was really, really kind of valuable for the pipe world. So just my 2 cents.
That's good. You know, honestly, I think that this even the concept of whether or not, you know, like putting together a list of like the most high end pipe tobaccos and kind of gauging whether or not they're worth it, almost like an opposite of the hamster cage or something of that nature, might be a topic for a future episode.
Yeah.
All right, man. Well, this has been a lot of fun. I've really enjoyed diving into some Wes Anderson. And hey, I'm sure people will have some thoughts on this episode. You can keep up with us throughout the week. You can follow me. I'm at The Real Bo York.
I'm at John David Cole, or you can get us at the shop at underscore Country Squire.
Of course, the show's handle is at Squire Radio, but all that information and more can be found at countrysquireradio.com. Well, John David, let me go ahead and wish you a very early and enthusiastic happy Father's Day heading into this weekend.
Yeah, it's my first one, man. I'm excited.
Yeah.
Should be good. I can't wait to receive that really fancy pipe that my 9-month-old daughter bought me.
There you go. Exactly, man. Well, I hope it's a great one, and hey, let's go have a day.
See you, brother.